Tim the Tool on jazz flute.
Yeah, me and Will Ferrell.
Running across the tops of the tables.
Kicking over wine glasses. That escalated quickly.
You're listening to the Drew Marshall Show. We're streaming live at drewmarshall.ca. We're live right here in Southern Ontario on Joy 1250. We need to just put that in as a bumper. I hate saying that every time.
Then get one made.
Okay, I'll do that.
I could do it.
Two years ago we did it and people thought we were crazy. Well, make room for crazy because we're back with Soul Survivor. Religious tribes competing for the soul of one person. Tribal leaders get to explain to our Soul Survivor what it is that their tribe actually believes. And the tribal leaders will not have immunity, as we found out in our first week. Our Soul Survivor will be able to challenge, critique, or question any aspect of all tribal codes, and at the end of the contest, our Soul Survivor will then decide which tribe presented the most compelling case for faith, and then reveal to us if they'll be joining that tribe.
Wow, nicely done, Drew.
Thank you. This week, we would like to introduce to you our new Soul Survivor, Greg. Due to some personal and health issues, our previous Soul Survivor, Ryan, is unable to continue participating with the show. So today we would like to introduce to you Greg, Double G Greg. Hello, Greg.
Hello, Drew. How are you today?
Hello, Newman. Greg, I want to let our listeners know that we're going to spend a bit of time with you, and then we're going to get our tribal council member, Matt, to join us and give us his take on how things have been going and what he's heard and listened to and found out and discovered. And then we're going to get Dr. James Beverly, Associate Director of the Institute for the Study of American Religion, author of Nelson's Illustrated Guide to Religions, on the phone. So, first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself. What is your match.com profile say?
Absolutely nothing, because I am married.
Oh, right.
Happily
yes.
Married.
Yes.
And I'm a writer and a blogger. I'm going through a career change. I used to, the last 3 years I spent renovating houses and doing construction work. And I also was an IT specialist in call centers for about 13 years.
Okay.
And other things, as you could see on my bio. So I've been a jack of all trades for sure.
Yeah. Why so many different things? Are you ADD?
Maybe. I might be.
Oh, look, a squirrel.
It's not ADD. It's more I like interesting things. I like new challenges. I've always enjoyed learning, and I tend to want to put myself up against steep challenges where halfway through I start to wonder why in the world I did that. But to see it through.
That's called marriage, isn't it?
That's called marriage and tenacity, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're married, and do you have children or family?
Two adult children. My daughter's 25, and she's just heading into a master's program in psychology.
Wow.
And my son's 22, turning 22 soon, and he is in an engineering program at George Brown.
Having a child going into psychology, does that make you wonder how you parented that kid?
Well, it makes me nervous being around her because, you know, she's always analyzing. And, of course, she was like that anyway, she's well-suited for it.
Yeah. Grew up culturally Christian. What does that mean?
Well, I grew up my mother was brought up WASP, and then in her late teens, she converted to Catholicism, and she married my father, who's a Catholic. And in the early 70s,
did she convert because she married your father?
Well, she used to tell us that, but the truth is she converted beforehand and met him at a church picnic in New Hamburg.
That's what you do, folks.
Yes.
You become a Christian, then join Christian Mingle.
Yes.
That's what you do.
That's what you do.
Find the man for your plan. Yeah. Sorry, yes, so?
Well, so I think that went along fairly well. I was baptized. Is it baptized for a Catholic? Because baptized.
Christened.
Christened, yeah. Yes, thank you. But they went through a marriage breakup in the early 70s, which was still not a good time to be doing that.
How old were you?
Oh, 3 or 4.
Okay.
And the church basically dropped her in the sense that she, you know, it was an annulment. Her newfound enthusiasm for Catholicism waned very quickly.
Sure.
And the pendulum swung, and she went the other way with saying, that's it, we're not going to church, it's all craziness. And so I really didn't, other than going with some friends here and there, I wasn't a churchgoer.
Okay, so you grew up then, because the divorce happened around 3 or whatever, you grew up with a mom who poo-pooed on Christianity, poo-pooed on church, Catholicism, what?
Absolutely. Yes, 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 and yes. Yes, of okay. course. But I describe myself as culturally Christian because I think it's a misnomer to say, you know, I was really brought up with a very sort of typical WASP environment. Mm-hmm. My grandparents were very WASPy. you know, we did the Lord's Prayer, as I mentioned the other time. Sure. We knew all the Bible stories. You know, I grew up in a Christian culture, so it would be silly for me to say that I'm not influenced by that and I'm not a part of it.
So then you got into what?
Dabbled
Stoicism is part of your story.
I got into a bit of Buddhism with the Tibetan monk, the fraudulent guy. We don't need to go over him anymore.
I think we should. What are you talking about again?
Well, I started reading the Lobsang Rampa books, which was really the only sort of religious type items in the house. And
your mom had those in the house?
That's right. She was avidly reading them. He was pretty popular in that early New Age movement, mm-hmm. where people were looking at Eastern mysticism and starting to become fascinated with it. So they were completely fictitious, but they still encapsulated the proper tenets of Buddhism, and so I could learn a bit from that. But really getting into high school and onward, I was reading more of the Greek philosophers, and then, of course, my favorite, Marcus Aurelius, who really is not necessarily a Stoic philosopher, but he was a philosopher who followed Stoicism. Mm. And it's interesting, when I was looking back on that, his book is in many ways almost as old as the Bible, and it's still being published, translated, debated, and read today. So it's coming up onto 2,000 years old, and so some enduring qualities. And the interesting thing with Aurelius was that he was the Roman emperor for about 19 years. He was the most powerful man with the most powerful nation in the world. And so what he has to say, it's interesting to read. He was nobody's fool.
Stoicism, for many, they hear the word and they go, oh, that's old stuff.
Yeah.
What is it?
Stoicism is a little bit about keeping a stiff upper lip and working hard, maybe keeping your complaints down a bit. It can be slightly religious. In the time, they did acknowledge other religions or churches or gods, but it's really a code of ethics, behaving well, working hard, mm-hmm. that type of thing. And so that's where you get that bit of a misnomer where people start to say, oh, don't be such a Stoic, don't hold it all in or pretend nothing's happening. It's not as cold as that, but it is more of a practical guidebook. So
if somebody's a good Stoic, what do they look like? How would I know that they're a good Stoic?
Oh, I didn't mention the funny hats?
No.
I don't think you
didn't mention the funny hats.
I thought every group had a funny hat or slippers. Anyway. I don't know how you would distinguish. I think the Stoic would be the person who's not going to necessarily chime in too much on a conversation in religion. You know, if you're at a party, a Stoic's probably going to sit back a little bit from that and say it's not irrelevant, but there are other things to be looking
at. So is this connected to your WASP background, the stiff upper lip, Stoicism?
Well, I think so in a little bit. I think it appeals to that. And, you know, I'm past the point where I want to try to pretend that I came into the world with an empty slate, or that in your 20s or 30s, or in my case coming into my 50s, that I'm going to wipe that slate clean and become somebody else. And I think it's more practical to look and say, I've got to work with what I have, and I can't spend any more time bemoaning what I did or didn't have growing up or in my life.
Okay, let's talk about the coming into the 50s thing.
Sure.
So you were born in 66?
I'm about 3 weeks earlier than you, Drew.
That's a little weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
So weird.
Tim, when were you born?
67. Eight.
Okay, so he's not
68.
Really? You don't remember
is
the
it
year
multiple
you were born?
Choice? It was, yeah, 68.
Oh. Megs, what year were you born in?
1992.
Wow.
I have shoes older than that.
Man, I got underwear older.
Yeah.
I wanted to know about what it means turning 50. Because for me, it's been a bit of a head spin, and I don't like when things have a hold of me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like being a slave to anything, whether it's chocolate or alcohol or sex or anything. Right? I just don't want to be a slave to anything. And there's a scripture that says that as well. So I don't like being a slave to the number 50.
Sure.
But however, it has really had an impact on me, and it's been evident to the people here at the station. It's been evident to the people inside my own tribe. You know, I got weird stuff going on in my head. I'm not sure where things are at anymore. What kind of an impact does 50 have on you?
Well, up until the last few months, it didn't have any impact in the sense that often if you would ask me how old I was. I'd have to sit and do the mental calculation. I really didn't think of it that way. But it's been in the last year or so where I'm feeling some of the physicality of getting older.
Bad knees.
Bad knees. You know, every joint in my body has a war story about how I hurt it somewhere and why it acts up.
Yeah.
And, you know, not being able to read things closely. You're starting to hit that physical degradation. And that's a heck of a reminder that, you know, we're headed towards the other side a little faster than perhaps we'd like to be.
Mm-hmm. But do you think turning 50 this year plays any role in you wondering about different tribes of faith?
A little. No, not really. I mean,
that's written in your bio.
Well, there's lots of stuff in bio, so they're mostly fictional, so I didn't...
there goes A&E for me.
Yeah, I think it does because it's a landmark part, right? It's a half a century, so it has some of that. But I don't think some of those questions... I don't think I felt them any less 2 years ago or 3 years ago. It's more the life circumstances. I mentioned in the first show, my wife has been working for 2 years now in the funeral business, which, of course, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is this mortality creeping in. We're having funerals. We're having people with illnesses, cancer in the family. Certain things are sort of creeping under the doorway, and I think that's what's catching my attention. And, yes, it happens to be, you know, I'm not going to turn 50 till November. I've got a wee bit of time yet.
How do you plan on selling it? Selling it. Celebrating
selling it?
Selling it.
Freudian.
Oh, I was writing the word commercial down as I said that.
I didn't really, I've never been a big birthday guy. I couldn't really care.
Really? You don't care about your 50th birthday?
Not particularly.
It's very stoic of you.
Yes, thank you. It's probably dishonest. I don't know. I don't think it's going to be probably dinner in or dinner out and
really?
Phone calls. Well, what are you going
to
do?
I hope to be on the Camino Trail.
Why?
Because he's always wanted an El Camino, and apparently they're quite present.
No, you're not allowed to drive a car in the Camino Trail.
All right.
No, I think, it's something that I thought about for quite a while, and I think that... I have a hard time just being still and being silent. Like tomorrow, I'm going in this thing called Float, which is a tank.
Are you going in
water? Yeah, saltwater tank. No light, no sound, and you're not touching anything. You're floating in water the same temperature as your body, so it feels like you're in nothing.
What if you get in there and you have to go to the washroom? That's what I think all the time. I get in.
Then it'll get a little warmer for a while.
Yeah, that might change the temperature of the water a little bit. Well, you can get out and go. There's a washroom right there. That's going to drive me a little bonkers, I know, right? But walking, when I'm out walking places, that's when I process the most stuff.
Yeah, and they're saying scientifically that's how you get your brain going.
With your carpentry or your building or whatever it was.
I was renovating houses.
That's the word.
But this last year, I'm only 2 blocks away from the Burlington Beach, so I'm doing about a 6 to 8 kilometer walk almost every day, and about 4 of that is on the sand at the beach, and it's beautiful and really.
So you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely, it's the only way to get your brain working.
Yeah.
And
so the other thing is I'm hoping I can do this. My goal is to not only do the Camino and to do it slowly, not try to get it done, but to do it as a silent retreat as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I will not talk for a month and a half.
I've spent many, many days off and on for the last 2 or 3 years when I was renovating. I was on my own, and I did have people visit occasionally, but it's been a considerable amount of time not talking.
Yeah.
And you'd notice a whole day and you haven't spoken to anyone because there simply wasn't anyone there.
And then that first time you go to speak to someone, you sound like you're going through puberty again. Hi.
I found myself turning into the lonely senior when I go to the grocery store and I cram too much into that little end conversation with the cashier. And
yes.
I think, oh my.
Yeah. Shut up.
Yeah.
Well, I think that... that you have been exposed already to on the show to various religious tribes,
sure.
Tribal leaders explaining what their tribes are about. Let's kind of go back to, I guess, the very first one. Let's do a little recap because we're kind of rebooting Soul Survivor here.
Absolutely.
With the change of our Soul Survivor contestants. So, Greg, the first one that we heard from was Bob Millett,
mm-hmm.
and he is one of the world's, if not the world's, most respected Mormon scholar. And... our Soul Survivor started off with kind of two of the harshest criticisms or questions about Mormonism, which in this scenario where we're asking about the person's faith, the person who is leading that faith or one of the leaders should be open to hearing those questions. You got to know they're going to come. We got to come at this authentically. I think it was just a little bit of guns a-blazing at the start and took our Mormon guest off guard.
There's two of you, and I think that there's two of you asking questions, and I think sometimes that can be a little overwhelming.
Sure. So we started off with, you're essentially a racist organization. That was the first question.
Yes.
And then it followed by, and your founder was in prison 4 years before he started the religion for fraud.
Yeah.
And so our tribal leader hung up.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a little disappointing. What do you know about Mormonism yourself? Have you not had a little experience with the Mormon group?
I have. I had a crush on a Mormon girl in high school.
Haven't we all?
And wonderful, bright, intelligent, funny, good-looking young lady at the time. But there was no way in the world Dad was going to let her step out of that Mormon bounds. And she was always tempted by everything at school because they weren't allowed carbonated beverages, or certainly caffeinated, couldn't smoke, they couldn't drink. Mm-hmm. So, of course, the minute she had the chance, that's what they were all doing. And, you know, it was a false boundary that's set up. But her father was a very stern, big elder in the church, and I didn't like him. I didn't think he was a very nice man.
That's it.
Well, he was. He was a jerk.
Yeah. So now this, I want to bring into this conversation. And actually, Meg, let's get Matt on the phone. I want him to be part of this conversation because we're recapping sort of where things have gone here on the show. What our previous Soul Survivor Ryan said was, you know, depending on whether we buy into one's faith tribe or not depends on our experience with those within that tribe. Do we count on what the tribe says versus what the tribe does? Do you know what I mean? What do you think about that?
I think they're emotional ties. And I'm getting the feeling, especially as we go through the program, and we're talking to when we got into Muslim and Buddhist, both of the gentlemen there were also converts. And I have a feeling unless you get that in your blood by the time you're in your 20s, when you're still open to that, mm-hmm. I think after that, there's a bit of forward bargaining, I think, that goes on, a bit of cynicism to say, not sure I buy all of this, but I really like the community. I really want to be a part of this for whatever reasons. I have a really hard time with it. After Arun, not to get too far ahead, Drew, but after Arun Gandhi was on, you know, wonderful man, very, very much a humanist or a universalist. Mm-hmm. So we didn't get anything bad about anything that the Hindu tribe's doing. Now, I have a Ganesha statue at home, a little wooden, which is one of the Indian gods. Just don't know that I could go into a temple and start lighting incense to Ganesha on a holiday.
Right.
You know, I'm just going to feel ridiculous doing it.
Right.
That's Hanuman.
That's your stoicism coming in there.
I would say probably anyone in this room would probably have. Could you do it? I mean, you.
Yeah, I've done it before.
Oh, but to say like you're in and this is it. This is your new religion.
Oh yeah, no.
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 No,
I
could do it out of respect, but yeah, I'd have a hard time feeling
sure.
in my heart.
Well, let's bring Matt in on the conversation as well. This is our tribal council member, Matt, who was one of the original four that came in the studio. Matt, how you doing, man?
Good, buddy. How are you?
I'm well. We surprised you. We got you a little early, eh? I told you I didn't want to rip
you
off.
Sorry, time's up, Matt.
All right, well, we're all done.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Have a good night.
So, Matt, Greg and I were just starting to sort of summarize this Soul Survivors events and talking about the different tribes. We just finished talking about how things didn't go well with the Mormon tribal leader. Did we call you at the end of that one? Who did?
I was laughing for like 20 minutes after that, so it was hilarious.
Right, right. And we were saying, look, you know, maybe we didn't prepare the guest the way we should have, although he's done it before. I think our last Soul Survivor contestant, Catalina, was very amicable, very warm and open and curious. And this year we had four guys in the studio who all have a little bit of pushback. I think that's – I'm not saying women don't push back, don't write me letters, but anyway. So So we did push back. We started off a little tough with the Mormon one. And then the next week was what was the next week?
Gandhi.
Arun Gandhi
was 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's right.
We had him for 2 weeks.
So Arun Gandhi was the following week. Did you hear any of that, Matt?
I heard the first one. It didn't sound like he was very he sounded very liberal Hindu to me. He didn't sound very conservative. He didn't like any time questions were asked to him, he was just it wasn't like a question, Dodge, but it was like, yeah, I know they believe that, but I don't.
Right. Greg, you said the same thing to me.
It's shadow boxing. And the same with Hamza Yousef and even Bob Thurman. You're getting these highly educated, you know, top drawer people. The problem is they're too good. And they say, well, yeah, I don't do that. Oh, we don't do that. I mean,
I think a lot of, sorry to cut in, but I think a lot of times what happens is that people are getting very, very stern, and they want as much, people are very curious. So if you're gonna ask questions to a guy from the Mormon Council, or not Council, the Mormon religion, the questions that are going to be asked are obviously Joseph Smith and blacks. If you ask Scientology, they're going to bring up Xenu and
Tom Cruise
and whatever stupid things they believe. And so these people are going to have to answer questions that are the fundamental attributes and tenets of their religion. And it's like, and I just think you might have got me personally, and this isn't a hit on you, Drew, but those two guys, the Mormon and Gandhi's grandson, like it was nice listening to him talk, but like they didn't really talk too much about the actual religion to me, in my opinion.
And I think no, this is I will own that because you know, I left things over to our previous soul survivor to kind of take the money and run, so to speak. And we didn't actually cover what the religion believes, the tenets of the belief, and that's why we've got. I want people to look into James Beverly's books, "Religions A to Z: A Guide to 100 Influential Religious Movements." James A. Beverly, and Dr. Beverly will join us in just a little bit. So, what I heard from both of you is, in this day and age, with the globalization and the internet, and how everybody can really understand the nuances and the ins and outs of every faith tradition. If you're going to be a representative of any tribe, you've got to be able to, not shadow box, but you know what I mean? You've got to be able to handle these questions without sort of some perceived defensiveness. And the problem is that some of these, you see, look, guys, I didn't pick ultra right wing anybody's. I mean, otherwise, when it comes to Tribe Jesus, we're going to get someone from Fred Phelps' church on the phone to represent Christianity, and that's not going to work, right? I'm not going to get Jerry Falwell for a couple of reasons. One, he's dead, and two, that kind of right-wing stuff, extreme right-wing stuff, I don't get into. I had a choice. I had a Hindu monk from Hawaii, one of the biggest ashrams in the world, and he was good to go, but I thought, well, I do want to hear from Gandhi's grandson about this.
Yeah.
Because of that, there's a hook with his name, okay? But he was a little liberal, like you guys said. Well, yes, Hinduism believes this, but I don't necessarily subscribe to that. And would you say it was, Matt, would you say it was the same with Hamza Yousef?
No, I thought he, to be, well, again, like it goes back to your liberal versus conservative. I thought he was like the right mix. Like he knew his scripture, like he wasn't like, yeah, most Muslims believe that, but I don't. Yeah, it does say that, but I don't really, do you know what I mean? It was like, okay, like it does say this, but this is my interpretation, and it does say this, this is my interpretation. It seemed like the Hindu guy, Gandhi's grandson, did really, really question Dodged a lot.
Yeah. Well, he's a universalist.
I want to ask Greg, sorry to cut you off, but I want to ask Greg that, like, if I was there and I was doing this, there would be two things that would make me curious about people's religion and continue to make me curious about religions is that they make objective claims about reality and about the supernatural, and they usually, well, most of the time, have a code of ethics. So I'm curious as to what Greg is interested in, if he's interested in knowing which religion knows the pantheism or the underlying reality and theology that explains the universe and puts all of it together, or is he interested in which one has the smartest ethics?
I don't really know how to answer that. I think sometimes I don't want to quiz them too hard on objective reality, as you put it, because it just starts to be which fairy tale book do you believe, or it starts to be implied that it gets not disrespectful, but I want to hear what their beliefs are. One of the questions I wanted to ask Hamza Yousef, which we just didn't have time for, was if I were to convert, for example, to Islam, and say my wife and I both did, how would our lives change? Hmm. We'd be praying five times a day. She wouldn't be allowed certain jobs, or depending on the denomination, she wouldn't be allowed to work. She'd be covering her head. We'd be eating different foods. We'd watch different TV. I mean,
the ethics, right?
Well, not the ethics, but the ritual and the ritualization.
But that's
of that
tied way. In with ethics, I would imagine. It's in a way, would it not be?
I'd still separate the two because I think a lot of them become independent, right? It's not ethics that the Jews tell you you can't have pork anymore if you want to join them. It starts to become just an article of faith. So I look at those as ritual items.
Okay. Now, you brought up supernatural claims, and I think that's an interesting conversation. That's why, it's too short to go half an hour with any of these tribal leaders.
Yeah.
And yet it's radio. We just have to do that. It's just the way it works. There are boundaries here. We're not out for tea with these guys. And even then,
but I've asked about the supernatural and these people's version of understanding the world, because this goes without saying, but I think that I believe that everybody wants to believe things that are true. And I don't think I think there is objective truth. Things are true for everybody. They're not true for certain people. So when books claim to have the infallible truth about certain things, about how the universe started, or where ethics came from, or what happens when you die, where you go when you die, they all make incompatible claims. And I'm curious, the reason that I search, and I'm wondering if Greg does too, I'm curious as to which one of them is right. Because I don't think all of them are right. Maybe one of them is right, but all of them can't be right.
Oh, see, I'm just looking for which one's the least wrong. I don't think.
You want to believe things that are right, though.
I think all of them are absolutely delusional at a certain level. And it's only when you get up to the high level. And I had a world religions teacher that put it very well, is that people have a tendency to compare the highest of their own religion with the lowest of somebody else's.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And so we bring in all these high rollers right now in these different areas. And let's face it, they could all get together for a beer or tea. I don't think they disagree with each other on anything. The tenets become very universal at a high level. And
you don't think that they would disagree on who created the universe and
even the Catholic,
not judging you when you die?
The Catholic Church is believe, at a high level, is Catholicism is starting to agree with Islam. I mean, they find different levels. Now, what they'll say is, let's not talk about all the details. That's for all the plebs. But we all agree to be nice and peace and be kind to your neighbors and do all these different things. And those things haven't changed. And all the religions seem very similar when you get away from what I call the ritual component. But I found the most fascinating thing is the difference between the East and the West. Reincarnation is a big one for me. The caste system, reincarnation. That, to me, is just such an enormous mental divide between the Eastern and Western religions. The one shot and you go to heaven or hell, or, hey, you got about 1,000 shots at this. And, just plug along. To me, that is just such an extraordinary line in the sand, and I wish I could just do an entire show just on that.
Okay, so Gandhi's grandson, Arun Gandhi, said during the show that his grandfather said that God is at the top of the mountain and all of us climb up different parts of the different sides of the mountain to get to God. Pluralism is what we're talking about, different ways to God. What I hear you saying, Matt, I think, well, actually, you're both saying this in a way, but Matt, you really are saying, no, I don't buy into that. I don't buy into this kumbaya pluralistic stuff.
Ethically, sure. Like, that's why I'm curious why he's into it, because of, like you say, in the ritual, and I understand that everybody has their own journey, but, like, for me, the two things that make sense are, like, they say that religion is God gives orders, right? There's not really morality. The morality is the order of it, like, what you're supposed to be doing. And I think people in the world follow these orders because they believe the objective truth of the claims of that book.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Well, are you saying that that there's no sense behind the rules? It's just because the rules are the rules. That's why people follow them?
No, there's sense behind the rules, but like we're not talking about right and wrong. We're talking about the black and white. We're talking about the gray. There's a lot of gray when it comes to morality. If you've ever read any moral philosophy, there's a ridiculous amount of should you do this, should you do this, more like the Syrian refugee crisis. No, we should take care of our own. Should we take care of other people? And I'm curious as to which of these books and which of these religions understands it not better, but knows what's right objectively.
Right.
Right. And the ethics would follow.
Matt, I would suggest that if you as you delve into each of the major religions and you stay away from what I call the ritual component or some of the more bizarre beliefs, I think you would find that the major tenets of all the religions are almost identical. They are so identical that morality is not objective. Morality transcends those religions. And there's a book called The Perennial Philosophy by Aldous Huxley.
Aldous Huxley, yeah.
And right. He's got, you know, he can put more in a paragraph than most people can put in an entire book. And it's fascinating because he looks at the perennial philosophy or ethics that weaves in and out of all the major religions. Mm. And he does a wonderful job of it. And actually, that has been a life-changing book for me, along with Marcus Aurelius. But the ethics are not a subjective. They run all the way
exactly.
through.
Exactly. They're objective.
I'm sorry. I misinterpreted what you said, madam. Apologies.
But No. I believe morality is objective.
Well, folks, we are near the end of our show. We're in the middle of our Soul Survivor segment. We're taking a bit of a, a bit of a intermission.
Step back,
when
a breather.
When it comes to getting tribal leaders on the show, we've switched Soul Survivors. Greg is now our Soul Survivor. Ryan is unable to continue with our show. And see, also on the phone is our Tribal Council member, Matt. Matt, that basically means that Matt was one of the original gang that came in, and Matt's one of the original gang members. Ooh, that sounds scary.
Yeah.
Who has stayed with this. We've called him a couple times, ripped him off of time, and now we've got him back on the line. See how my rhyming works quite well there. Dr. James Beverly, Associate Director of the Institute for the Study of American Religion, author of Nelson's Illustrated Guide to Religions. Jim Beverly's books have been a constant resource for me as I have interviewed various religious leaders throughout the years. Today, our Soul Survivor Greg and Matt will have the opportunity to speak with Dr. Beverly because he's on the line with us right now. Jim, how you doing?
You hope I'm on the line.
Yes, I do hope you're on the line.
How are
you today?
I'm fine, Drew.
So we were just recapping some of the tribal leaders that have been on our show.
Yeah, some of it. As you know, I have to finish a book project, so I couldn't listen to everything today.
Oh, my goodness. Please make it more about me, Jim.
I apologize for my weakness and failure.
So you know that we ticked off the Mormon tribal leader, Bob Millett.
You know, I did listen to that, and I could hardly believe it. I didn't think you guys were, you know, too much of jerks.
No, not any more than usual.
I was really surprised. I've met Bob quite a few times over the years, and I was just surprised that he left the show so quickly.
Yes, I think we all were. And I'm sorry for that, because you put me on to Bob. I hope that doesn't impact your relationship with him. And then we went to Arun Gandhi, Gandhi's grandson, talking about Hinduism. And one thing that Matt and Greg both came up with was that because Arun Gandhi is a universalist, a humanist in many ways, he sort of said stuff like this, Jim. He'd say, well, yes, that's what Hinduism is all about, but I don't believe in that.
Well, he's allowed to do that. Everybody in our world's allowed to say what they want. I mean, except for certain countries where you might get killed for saying things. But,
right.
So, you know, he's a universalist. He probably picks up some big ideas from Hinduism, but he certainly wouldn't want to focus on exclusive Hindu claims, or I imagine he's very liberal on whether the stories of the Hindu gods are true.
Well, give us an example of an exclusive Hindu claim.
Well, I just read the other day some Hindu gurus saying that if you cannot reach enlightenment unless you have a personal guru. So I don't have a personal guru, unless you want to say Jesus is my guru. But so some Hindus can be very exclusive. The founder of the Hare Krishna movement was really narrow-minded. I still remember reading for the first time his account that the moon landing Neil Armstrong did wasn't actually on the moon. He watched the landing on TV, and then he announced to his followers that it wasn't the moon, because the Hindu scriptures teach that the moon is 800,000 miles the other side of the sun, and it's inhabited.
With the Mormons.
With the Mormons. The Mormons live there. No, that's not.
The Mormon deities are supposed to live near a planet called Kolob.
Kolob.
Okay. So, you know, one thing that's easy, and certainly learned this throughout the years, you know, on the show, and Jim, you've been one of my teachers in many ways in regards to this, what I'm about to say, which is, it's so easy. It really is easy to point out the ludicrousies of all faith systems. But when you got to really take a look at your own faith system and what you believe. I mean, there are some, you know, Matt, point out what you would say would be lunacies about Christianity or that the Bible teaches.
Do you want me to?
No, I want Matt to say it. I want Matt to say it first. Yeah.
Okay, so, and again, I'm not trying to insult the audience. I'm sure that it's a mostly Christian audience. But, like, to me, as a non-theist, as a person that's just trying to find my way in the world, and I respect the scientific method a lot, mm-hmm. I think the talking snake, I think parting the Red Sea, I think the idea of, I don't know, there's a lot all over the Bible. There's a lot of objective truth claims that any scientist wouldn't try to prove because they know it's not easy to prove these things. It's like
well, you know, one thing there, you can't scientifically prove anything from the past because we can't go back in a time machine and do experiments.
But that would discount everything that has to do with space, though. Any cosmology or astronomy is in the past. Correct.
Oh, yeah, but there's a difference between doing experiments that can be validated or not about, say, the stars. That's different than saying we can check out whether Jesus walked on water.
No, and that's true. I remember Bart Ehrman, which Drew interviewed, talked about the difference between history and the past. And we know in the past, my grandfather on June 5th, 1939, ate dinner. We can't prove what it is, but history, we have somewhat of an understanding of how to reach back to know what happened.
Okay,
that
gets to be a slippery slope. I mean,
I agree with you can check history out. All I'm saying is that checking history is not scientific like doing a lab experiment.
Jesus remained undocumented.
My only question would be to you would be Bart Ehrman in his book How Jesus Became God talks about when you're trying to prove something, like let's say we're trying to prove the resurrection of Jesus,
right,
or the empty tomb.
Right.
Now, we wouldn't jump to supernatural claims. We would always jump to natural claims, like maybe the body was stolen. Maybe
well,
there's
100
reasons
only,
that we don't have to jump to supernatural claims.
Well, yeah, you don't have to jump anywhere. You should just study it and figure out which theory you think is the best. But I don't know how.
And that would go along the same lines of like, someone's like hallucinating, we would look at them as like they're hallucinating now. But back then, if it was written in a holy book thousands of years ago and someone said that they saw the Virgin Mary or they saw some supernatural
phenomena,
we would believe it because they saw it. But now we wouldn't jump to that understanding of believing those people. We would just put it in the realm of understandable science where we say, well, it's more of a psychological phenomenon rather than a supernatural phenomenon.
So, okay, I got to interject here. When it comes to faith, this mm-hmm. is what we're talking about. Faith is faith. I can't believe I just said faith is faith. I want to apologize for that. It's like saying, it is
Drew,
what it is.
Drew I can't, is Drew.
Yeah, well, that's
Drew
scary.
Drew is Drew. Drew Marshall is Drew Marshall.
Thank you.
Amen.
He thinks, therefore he is.
There you go.
Preach it.
But what I'm trying to get at here is, of course, if you cannot prove the existence of God, you can't disprove the existence
of
God.
Okay, hold it, Drew.
What?
You're saying something that's really debatable. I've just been teaching on that. There are many incredible philosophers who believe that they can prove the existence of God, and they write 400-page books to do it. Mm-hmm. For example,
Francis Collins didn't.
Huh?
Francis Collins didn't say anything like that. He mapped the genome, but he would say that we couldn't prove God.
Well, Francis Collins is not known as a great philosopher.
So nobody's known as a scientist.
Drew just said you can't prove the existence of God. All I'm saying is there are philosophers who are incredible, who write 400-page books.
Who claim that they can prove God.
Yeah.
Right.
I think if you're looking for objective proof, Matt, you almost seem to be more in the Stoic camp than, you know, you're looking for logic and rational explanations. I think it precludes you from all the major religions. There's a leap that has to be taken. And I think you have to look at it metaphorically in the sense sometimes whether it's factually correct or reported correctly, it's what we draw from it as the lessons. And this is why I didn't go after some of the religions about some of their belief systems, because they'd say whether it happened or not, what we really have to learn is this is a parable of sorts. A story doesn't need to be true to be effective. So whether Jesus was resurrected or not, It's not so much questioning that. It's supposed to say what are the implications on the teachings?
Now, Greg, where would you get that notion about say, whether Jesus was raised from the dead? The earliest reports about Jesus don't say, go look at the empty tomb, but it doesn't matter if he's risen or not.
Well, perhaps that was a poor example, James, but I just, what I'm trying to illustrate is that in any of the religions, some of the illustrative passages about things, it's not so much whether they're actually completely factual. If you're looking, let's say, outside in at another religion that's not Christian, It's more as what does that mean in their teachings or the way you need to live your life or live that religion?
Okay, so I just want to bring in Tim the Tool. I can't believe I'm doing this.
I know.
Why would I let you in on this intelligent discussion?
Because I am the village idiot, and sometimes we need that awkwardness. Didn't we just have that conversation,
we just had that conversation
with Sammy Rhodes?
Yes.
The broken clock is right twice a day.
Yes,
there you go.
For me, I think, you know, and whether this is an idiot's conception or not, I don't know. I just don't think anything in this world is black and white. I don't think, you know, science is fallible.
Thanks, Michael Jackson.
Hey, Tim,
science is fallible.
How about this? Is molesting children a matter of black and white?
In what sense?
Well, when you say nothing is black and white, it implies there's no clarity or absolutes. But
well, I push back with that. You know, like, you know, what about abortion? Is it black and white?
No. Do you think that everything in the world is relative, and there are no black and whites?
Are we talking about claims? Yeah, I'm talking more about claims.
For a long time,
Mr. Beverly. It was you more like
call me Jim.
Jim, for me, the question about, and this is a pushback with Matt, is I don't think what I was trying to say, and you know, you're exactly right. Child molesting is wrong.
But says who? Says who?
Says Jim. And but for me, it's the question of science. I don't think science is infallible either. So,
right.
I mean, in a sense, you know, that takes a leap of faith as well.
Right.
And so I'm just pushing back that in a sense, you know, we're all arguing the same point. Whether it's science, whether it's faith, it's all the same thing.
Greg, you feel the same?
I do to some extent, though. I think Jim is trying to take us down a path where he doesn't have doubts about certain parts of Christianity, and therefore they're objective or factual.
Hold on. I don't doubt some parts of Christianity. There's a lot in Christian faith. I'm what I call an equal opportunity bigot. I really try hard to, when I study religions all the time, I work hard at not setting up a double standard so that the dark side of, say, Buddhism compares with the good side of Jesus. I want to think about tough things in the Bible or stories that are hard to believe or Christian tradition.
Yeah, but you weren't saying that about
it. I was, we're in 100% agreement with that, and that was my point as well.
Yeah.
I don't want to go after all the little bits and pieces when we're looking at the other religions because we just end up going down a dark alley.
Yeah.
But I would counter and say some of these are stories and some of them are facts, and I think you and I would
How do you discern those?
Well, I think Jim and I would disagree considerably
on which was which. Right.
And I'm standing back and trying to pull the best out of all of that, which would be they all sound a lot like stories to me.
But right, I was going to say that's the only way you can really sit back and pull the best out of all of them is by saying, okay, it's all story.
It's all story.
Because once you start saying that this is fact or that is fact in any tribal system, they then don't line up against each other, and that's where you get the friction.
There's extant documentation of the times around when Jesus was supposed to be alive and walking the earth, and there's no mention of the guy anywhere. I'm just throwing that one. I mean, that's a whole different discussion, I suppose.
What do you mean no mention of the guy anywhere?
Well, there's
he's
no...
He's mentioned in Josephus. He's mentioned in Roman historians.
I think Josephus, wasn't that a counterfeit or later done?
That's... Well, there is a debate about a fragment of Josephus, yeah. But there's... On this, you can read Craig Evans or Gary Habermas, who've written whole books on references to Jesus outside the New Testament.
Okay, well, let me rephrase it, Jim. Let me just say, if I'm looking in and I have doubts about some of the factual components of the Bible, mm-hmm. I think somebody in the church would say to me, you can have issues and doubts, but try to look at a bigger picture and what the message is or what
that
the properties
would be fair.
Are.
That sounds like Bruxy. What does that sound like?
Isn't that what...
Greg, the only thing you got to watch is if you reduce all religions to the same general big ethical principles, which is fine. It's okay to see, and it's actually wonderful to see, common, phenomenal, moral principles that are shared. But in the end, you don't want to strip Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, Judaism, Taoism, Christianity from the core messages that are central to the millions or billions of people who believe those faiths.
Yeah, fair enough.
That is.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I just spent the last few days looking at Tibetan Buddhist material, and I know you had Robert Thurman on, Drew, right?
Yes, last week. Yeah.
I mean, you can't tell the Dalai Lama to take away the message of Gautama, or what I was looking at recently is the Tibetan Buddhist dependence on spirit guides or oracles, which is like one of the most amazing stories in religion.
Hmm. Matt, I heard you jump in there. What did you want to say?
I'm just like, and maybe I'm just not listening close enough, but I asked the same thing of Ryan, and maybe I'm just not getting it from Greg. So maybe, like, to set this up, Greg, in 20 words or less, what are you looking for in these religions? Are you I have a hard time. I'm looking for what's correct and what is the best guide ethically. I'm curious where you stand, why you're doing this.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, well, certainly for me the ethics are important, but I think after that, when you're saying which religion is best, or I don't think it's an easy thing.
Well, you're
to
picking
just
one, right?
Oh, I'm picking one to join if I were to join. Mm-hmm. Nobody said that I was becoming a convert.
I understand that,
can I ask a question?
Hold on. Matt, go ahead. Matt, real quick.
But you're asking these questions to vote some off the island and keep one, but why? What's going to discern what you cast off and what you keep?
Good question.
Well, I think... Greg? I think it's a struggle, and I think I have to keep moving forward, and I will work on an answer. I'm certainly conflicted even at this point.
Yeah.
And it's not
so you don't
clear.
Know.
I don't know.
And Jim?
Well, let me. I'd say to Greg, you know, I've studied virtually every religion, hundreds of different groups. I don't think there's anyone like Jesus. I don't think Mohammed compares to Jesus or the Buddha or Krishna, etc. Or Joseph Smith, he was really a disgusting human being.
He was.
He would screw your wife and screw your wife's, your daughter. Joseph Smith married a mother and a daughter. He married two sisters. He wasn't a great moral guy.
So in terms of morality and looking to surrender to somebody who's a religious leader...
What's the point of attacking the leader of the faith? This is where I don't go in with the hard questions, Jim, because they can say, well, fine, whatever that did or didn't take place, let's look at the Church of the Latter-day Saints as it is today and come with us on this journey. You know, Gandhi had some weird things going on with his nieces. Muhammad liked war. He liked the young girls. I mean, you know, each one has an issue. Perhaps Jesus doesn't have the same baggage, but... You know, going at the religions just to attack the founder seems to me to be, disingenuous at best.
Okay, hold on. I've got to press pause here for a second. Let's let everybody have a final word because we're running out of time. We're at the end of our show. So, Matt, we'll let you just say a final piece.
I'd like to start by saying next time you do this, I would really appreciate a call to me to ask me to be the person to do it.
Okay. All right.
No, personally, like my journey, and I'm curious how it intersects with Greg, is I want to believe things that are true. These books claim things to be true, which I'm trying to discern which one is true, because I think they're all incompatible. Not all of them are correct at the same time. Maybe one is correct, maybe none are correct.
Okay.
But I'm also concerned with which of them has the best moral foundation. And Greg's brought up a lot of good points about don't follow the leader, look at the tenets of the people that actually follow it, i.e. the fact that most Muslims are great people, but some are bad. Like, there's a lot to it, and it's very interesting, and I'm...
Well, we're glad you're with us.
I'm very happy to be a part of it.
Yeah, and stay with us, Matt. I mean, not for the rest of the show. I mean, we'll call you back again and give you less time. Greg, quick.
Well, Matt, I can only be me, and I can't be you, so I understand your frustration.
That is true.
But you do have to realize that often these are very abbreviated, quick-flowing. We have other people asking questions. So quite often I have other things I would like to pose, but we just don't have the time for it, and so it's difficult.
All right, and final word from Jim Beverly. Go.
First, two things. One, Greg, I don't think it's disingenuous for me to question the founder of the Mormon Church, because you're allowed to examine movements. I wrote a whole book on Mormonism, and this is a general show, and I don't feel guilty at all warning about... I mean, Jesus said, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. The evidence that Joseph Smith abused women is insurmountable. So I don't feel it's hypocritical to point that out. But in the end, my big point is I think you, in the end, should look closely at Jesus. I think he's the best.
Yay, Jesus.
Yeah, go with Jesus.
Guys, thank you very, very much. That was fascinating. That was one of the better segments we've ever had. Jim, I appreciate your time as always. Matt, thank you for your patience. Greg, welcome aboard. And folks, that's the end of our show today. If you missed any of today's show, you can go to our website at the end of the week and tune in for your listening pleasure. May you all find the God who sees you. Thanks.
A trooper, and I'm drinking like a bum. I'm a liberal backslider, and it sure is a lot of fun.